From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and original documentaries from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. And today on the program, we're going to listen back to two stories recorded at the 2014 Riot LA Comedy Festival, a weekend of incredible performers. And we've been lucky to feature stories from the last 2 years of the festival. And today we'll revisit some stories from the first one. And it's on a topic all too familiar to a lot of people here in Los Angeles. And that is getting your foot in the door of show business. It can be a grueling and humiliating process where rejection, humiliation, and self-doubt just come with the job.
As far as I know, you go on a professional audition in New York City and you're surrounded by vaudevillians and Eastern European circus acts. I don't know.
While I was auditioning, I was constantly thinking that I don't belong here. I'm trying to fool these people and it's not working. They know that I should not be a part of this world.
To try and get your career started, you may just have to take any job that will have you. And that's what comic and actor Andrew Daly did. Sure, you know him now for his hilarious Comedy Central program, Review, or guest roles from all over your TV. But this story is about his first stab at show business. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
I was recently at a family function, and a woman who knows that I'm in show business came up to me and she said, "My daughter over there is in college and she's thinking about going into show business." And I thought, okay, so, you know, I'm going to be asked to like help somebody, who an aspiring person in show business, whatever. But then the next thing she said was, "We're trying to talk her out of it. I don't suppose you could help with that." That's a crazy thing to ask somebody. Like, "I love my daughter, please try to talk her out of the choices you've made." Because it also sort of has an implied, you're probably regretting it about now, right? I've looked at your credits, right? You gotta be wondering about the other roads you could have taken. What I said to her, and I think it's true, is that there's no point trying to talk somebody out of a career in show business because show business will talk you out of itself pretty well. If there's anything else you could possibly be happy doing, you will end up doing that because show business doesn't want any of us in it. It just wants to be alone. <laughs> 1994, in New York City, I was a recent college graduate with a bachelor's degree in drama, and a diploma which is asked for all the time. And through luck and the help of a friend, there was an agent who was willing to send me out on things with the caveat that she wasn't going to be able to send me out on much because nobody would want to see me because I had never done anything. But at some point she did call me and she said, "I've got something for you. It's a live industrial for a new soft drink." I don't know what those words mean, but okay. And she said, "There's no material to prepare, just go." So I go to this Midtown rehearsal space, and I walk into this waiting room with an extraordinary collection of characters. There was a guy in like a spangly cowboy outfit practicing lasso tricks, and there was a tap dance troupe in spangly outfits, and there was a gymnastics troupe in a lot of spangly outfits, and there was a bunch of old men with marionettes. There was an accordion player, and then there was a one-man band looking at the accordion player like one instrument. And then there was me, and I was a nice young man in a pair of Gap jeans and a freshly ironed Oxford with a not very professional headshot taken by a not professional photographer, stapled to the back of which was a list of plays that I was in college. Now, to me, at this point, nothing is weird because I had never been on an audition before. As far as I know, you go on a professional audition in New York City and you're surrounded by vaudevillians and Eastern European circus acts. I don't know. Okay. So I'm watching them go in and out of this room. And then it's my turn. And I go in and there's some guys sitting there and we exchange names and pleasantries and I'm smiling a lot. And then one of them goes, "Okay. All right, go." I was like, "Oh, what do you mean?" And he goes, "You know, do your thing." I was, "Oh, yeah, no, I don't have a thing." And he goes, "You don't know what this is about?" And I was like, "Oh, no, is it about something?" And he said, We're auditioning variety acts to draw a crowd so we can hand out free samples of a new drink called Fruitopia. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, no, I don't have a thing. And he goes, so... And it was an awkward moment, right? But he, to sort of diffuse the awkwardness, the guy goes, well, do you want to go outside and, like, think about it for a little while and then come back in when you have something? Yeah, I'll go out and spend about 30 minutes learning how to spin plates. What he was proposing was a retreat. Now, this is what you have to understand about my mental state at this point. I have wanted to be an actor since the time when I was 8 years old, and I was in a supermarket, and an old man came up to me, and he said, I know you. You're in the movies. And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, yes, you are the champ. Now, he was confusing me with Ricky Schroeder, and was probably suffering from some kind of dementia, but I liked it. And I've been chasing that ever since. He was so excited to see me. Quick side note, about 10 years ago, I was in an elevator and Rick Schroeder got in. And I told him that story, and it would not be possible for a person to be less interested in a story than he was in that. No possible way. The rest of that elevator ride took 45 years. But the point is, this was my first professional audition. I was not gonna leave that room. So I decided to improvise a story, for some reason in a big overblown British accent, about the profound effect that Fruitopia has had on my life. What a wretched soul I was before I discovered Fruitopia! After several hours of contortionists and French-trained clowns, this must have been refreshing because I was hired. But hired to do what? I figured out the deal pretty quick. So, at this time, Coca-Cola was losing sugar water market share to Snapple and Arizona Iced Tea, and they didn't like it. So, they launched this new beverage as a direct challenge to Snapple, and they understood that sort of like a Gen X anti-corporate sentiment was behind people's interest in Snapple. So they didn't want anybody to know this was Coca-Cola. They wanted people to think that this was being brought to you by like a Ben and Jerry's hippie fruit drink collective. That was... So they bought 9 old school buses, and they decorated them like Ken Kesey's bus, like if Ken Kesey was obsessed with fruit. And they sent them out across the country, and the idea was that they were going to have a bunch of weirdo street performers come out of them and put on a show, a free show, and hand out free drinks. No sell, man. Just free drinks to try and, you know, obstruct Snapple for the benefit of the more established brands of Coca-Cola. Anyway, so here was our lineup. I was on the Northeast bus. I was on the Tri-State Area bus. Okay, first one out of the bus is Lloyd. Lloyd is a rollerblading hip-hop mime. He's dressed... He's in a skin-tight black Lycra bodysuit and a creepy silver mask. Some very generic hip-hop music starts blaring, and he rolls out. I will always remember the 2 pieces of direction the director gave him during the rehearsals. This was all he said. He kept going, keep popping! Keep locking! And he did! He popped and locked. And it was high energy and bizarre, and it drew a crowd. I guess he's like people going, what is that, a robot? So then, next was Mark. Mark was a nice, well-dressed Canadian man who had one of these bamboo sushi mats, the kind of thing you roll sushi rolls in, but he had modified it so he could twist it and manipulate it into all kinds of different shapes. And there was a big band instrumental track playing behind him, and he sang a song that told a story that was then illustrated by the shapes that the sushi mat was put into. And it seemed impossible and kind of impressive. Then it was me, and I had no act. That story that I told in that audition, that never went well again. It didn't make any sense in this context. People were just confused by it. Like, and I was like still wearing Gap jeans and a nicely ironed Oxford, talking in an overblown accent about Fruitopia. It made no sense. But It didn't matter because I knew that the next act was great. The last act of the show was a magician named Mundaka. Now, Mundaka was a very mystical, spiritual magician, an illusionist, really. He dressed like he was in a 70s rock opera about pirates. And he smelled of ancient spices. He strode out from behind the bus with a 6-foot-tall staff that he did this elaborate dance with. And then he held it over his head, and streamers exploded out of either end. And then he held it up to his mouth and played it like a giant flute. And then, in a very calm tone like this, he told a beautiful story about the mountains and the stars and the children of the sun. And as he did that, things disappeared and reappeared, and rings interlocked and came apart, and the whole thing culminated in the sudden, stunning, beautiful appearance of a single white dove from a place where you didn't think one was. So the crowd went crazy for that, and out came the barrels of the free beverages, and, you know, those didn't taste very good, but it didn't matter, because Mundaka was great. And so it went for week after week, except that we didn't get to do very many shows because it was a logistical cluster fudge, KCRW. It was, a lot of the time we'd show up and they'd say we have no beverages, and then sometimes they'd say we have no ice and we're not going to hand out warm beverages, and a lot of time they didn't have permits to perform anywhere. So I spent a lot of time, really what this job was mostly, was sitting in a minivan with Lloyd and Mark and Mundaka and Mundaka's bird, who was beautiful in the act but kind of a pain in the ass to drive around with in a minivan. Because this bird just strode across the backs of the seats, soiling our pants. And Lloyd spent a lot of time listening to his Walkman, probably imagining himself hip-hop dancing to rollerblading on various songs. Mundaka spent a lot of time reading the Bible, which nobody talked to him about for fear of 10 weeks of good news. And then... And I spent a lot of time talking to Mark. I learned a lot about Mark. Mark was a close-up magician. He made his living at corporate events and parties. He was the last apprentice of the great Slidini, right? I think that might be impressive. He also, he was kind of a Japanophile, thus the sushi mat thing. He got his hair cut for $60 by these Japanese haircutting masters, and he would tell me that his hair was cut with a level of artistry and precision that I could probably not appreciate, and he was right. And... So at some point, Mark took pity on me. He goes, we're going to spice up your act. I'm going to take you to this shop on Broadway, this old classic magic shop. And what we're going to do is your act is now going to start. He goes, I'm going to ask somebody in the audience to pick a card, and I'll make sure they pick a card that you have tucked into your turban. And I was like, excuse me, my turban? He goes, yes. I'm going to buy you a big, like, ridiculous Swami's turban, and you're going to be in a big spangly robe, and you're going to be Psychic Steve from now on. And we're going to do that. And then you can tell your story. So fine, I'm up for anything at this point. We do it, it starts to go a little bit better, right? But, you know, at least it starts off well. So then, finally, the thing is winding down. I'm near the end of the story. We're told the folks at Coca-Cola headquarters wanna see what's up with this Fruitopia bus. And our bus has been chosen to go down there and do a show for all the executives. And they tell us, by the way, this is the first ever casual Friday at Coca-Cola headquarters. What that means is that the men still have to wear suits and ties, but they can be seen outside of their office without their jackets on. That's crazy. So we fly down there, and on the plane I realize, oh, I don't have my turban and my spangly robe. And so we get there. I tell the road manager as soon as we get there. He goes, all right, let's make a plan of action. Is there somebody back where it is who can FedEx it? Well, FedEx it. It'll arrive right before we go on stage to do the show. Okay, so we're at Coca-Cola headquarters. The men don't have their jackets on. We're doing the show. Lloyd starts off. My Swami suit is still not here yet. Lloyd starts it off. You know, people are into it. Mark goes out, and my Swami suit, I think as soon as Mark went out on stage, the road manager was like, okay, your Swami suit has arrived at the front desk. I'm going to go get it. He runs off to get it, but I'm supposed to be on after Mark. Now, Mark is winding up, and Mundaka says to me, do you want me to go on next, and then you can be last, or do you want to go on without your Swami suit? Tough call. Now, I know... I know what the safe choice is. The safe choice is to go on and let Mundaka close the show and not be the closer. I didn't do that. I said, yeah, Mundaka, go on. I will close out this bitch. So the road manager shows up midway through the Children of the Sun, and he shows up with this box, and I remember him smashing it open with a flashlight. And I put on the turban, I put on the spangly suit. Mark goes, let's do it. We do the card trick. I tell my story. It didn't go well. It just wasn't very good. And at the end of the show, like the Coke executives just averted their eyes from me awkwardly. And that was that. That's it. It's an anticlimactic ending. But I will leave you finally with this. I don't remember Lloyd's last name, so I cannot Google him. But I do know Mark is still in New York, performing at prestigious events all around the world, doing close-up magic. I think he is actually truly a master of it. And Mundaka appears to be hosting a Christian radio show somewhere in upstate New York. Fruitopia, from what I can tell, is still available in Canada and Australia. And I am right here telling this story, but not for long. Good night!
That's comic and actor Andrew Daly, recorded at the 2014 Riot LA Comedy Festival. Since that bus job, Andy Daly can be seen on the much-acclaimed Comedy Central program called Review. You're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. I'm Bob Carlson. And today on the program, two stories recorded live about getting a foot in the door of show business. The second story comes from an actor with a long and impressive resume of television roles, but the one that particularly stands out, of course, was the lovable drug dealer Badger on the late, great Breaking Bad. But there was once a time when Matt Jones was hustling for work like any struggling wannabe actor, trying to get his hands on the elusive Screen Actors Guild card. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
My career began with a lie that I told the Gilmore Girls. When you work in the entertainment industry and in Hollywood, a lot of really terrible, awful, confusing things happen all the time. And every once in a while, something magical will happen. And it's one of those things that you're always clinging to, you know, like vines that you're swinging from tree to tree through a forest of just garbage. And those magic moments are what keep you going. It's like a bad relationship, you know, just because you guys are screaming and crying and hate each other, that shooting star means that we should be together. So my career, I was like 18, and I moved to LA, the city. I'm from the suburbs, so it was only like a 20-minute drive. And I moved to the city, and I decided for some reason that I was going to try to be an actor. I was doing improv all over LA, and I got a commercial agent, and I started auditioning for commercials. But the problem was I couldn't book one because I was terrible in auditions. Because while I was auditioning, I was constantly thinking that I don't belong here. I'm trying to fool these people and it's not working. They know that I should not be a part of this world. They know that. I mean, look at me. I'm this tall, goofy looking, fat kid to chubby adult guy. And I don't belong on television or in movies. And they know that, these commercial casting people. And I couldn't book anything, and it was very frustrating. And I was auditioning for commercials in the daytime, and I at night I was doing odd jobs I found on Craigslist, and I was so broke. And then one day when I was 20, I got a call from the Gilmore Girls to audition for a co-star role. Now, if you don't know what a co-star is, any line on a TV show that's five lines and under is a co-star role. The part I was auditioning for was two lines. I was so, so excited. The way I got the audition was me and some friends that did improv together, we took all of our headshots, paper headshots, this was way back in the day, and we stuck our headshots and resume into manila folders, and we sent them to every single casting director in Los Angeles, and nobody called us, except the Gilmore Girls. And just me, not the other guys. So, sorry, guys. And that was magical. It was absolutely magical that I even got an audition. It was so amazing to me. So I did what any responsible 20-year-old kid would do. The night before, I got completely drunk on Captain Morgan's. I got so incredibly drunk. I don't know why, but I did, because that's what you do when you're 20. And the next morning was my audition, and I slept in, and I was gonna miss my audition. I woke up and I was like, oh my God, I have to be there in 5 minutes. And I lived on the west side of LA and the audition was in Burbank. And if you're not from LA, it might as well be Kentucky. It was so, so far of a drive. And it was like cutting through traffic and I was gonna get there in time. And I get there and I didn't realize it was on the lot. It was on the WB lot. So you had to like park in a structure and then go through security and get a pass. And I was like an hour and a half late for my audition. And I get there, and there's this big, like, one of those office buildings there. And I walk in, and I'm walking into the audition, and all these guys that look a lot like me are walking past me. I had a big afro back then. Guys that look like they're affiliated with bands of some kind. There's, like, the guy that looks like he's in Korn, and the guy that looks like he's in Pearl Jam, and, like, those type of guys. I walk in and there's a casting director standing there. He's like, all right, guys, we've filled the role so you guys can all go home. And I just walk past her. I was like, I'm going to pretend that has nothing to do with me. And I walk into the office and I'm like, hey, I'm here to audition. And she's like, we have already cast the part, so you can go home. We don't need you. I was like, oh, okay, great. Thanks. And I was actually a little relieved because I didn't have to go in and lie to these people that I belonged there, because I knew that I didn't. And I'm walking out of the building, and the casting director comes after me and taps me on the shoulder and goes, you know what? Come back in. Come back in. All the producers and the writers, they're in there. You can go in and meet them, and if they like you, we'll bring you back for another role. The role's been cast. You're not going to get anything, so just come back in. I was like, great. I walk into the office, and the outside office, there's a kid sitting on a sofa who has obviously gotten the part. He looked like Kurt Cobain, so his was Nirvana affiliation. And he looks at me and gives me a really dirty look like, oh my God, you better not be stealing my part. And they bring me into the room, and I go in, and the producers and writers are all so sweet, and I do the two lines. I think my lines, I don't remember, but they were like, yeah! And then the other line was, let's fry the turkey! Those were the two lines. And apparently I did it very well. They loved me. They were like, oh, so great. Thank you so much for coming in. But we cast the part, so thanks. And so I walk out. I walk out, walk past the guy on the couch. He looks at me, relieved. I walk out of the building, into the parking lot. Casting director runs back after me again, taps me on the shoulder. It's like, you know what? Come back in. So I walk back in, past the guy on the couch, and he gives me an even dirtier look, just so angry. I walk in, and they're like, look, we really like you, so we're just going to write a role for you on the show. We're going to give you two lines. We're also going to cast the guy outside, so we're just going to create a new part for you. What do you want the name of your part to be? And I'm like, Morgan, because last night I got drunk on Captain Morgan's, and that's what they named my character. And as I'm leaving, they say, and you're SAG, right? And I was like, yeah, of course. I was not in SAG. I had never done anything, so I couldn't be in the guild. But I lied because, what, am I not going to take the part? What choice do I have? So I lied to their face. So we shoot the episode like 2 days later. It was incredible. I was like on a set, and it was like the WB lot. So you see all these sets from movies that you've seen your whole lives, and it's so huge. And we're shooting all day. I'm in the background of stuff. And we do my lines. And then it hits lunchtime, and I'm thinking, man, I have fooled these people. I tricked them into casting me. So guess what? I know I'll never be here again. So I have to go run around everywhere I can on the WB. the WB lot. So I snuck into every major television show that was being filmed on that lot at that time. So I snuck onto the ER set, and I was like walking through the emergency room and like playing with the medical beds. It was really like a hospital, by the way. This was super impressive. I snuck onto the Friends set, and they were all up there reading their lines and blocking, and I was just sat in the back watching a blocking rehearsal with the Friends. And there was a little person there because there's a part played by a kid, but they had to have it be read by a little person because kids can't work all the time. It's a little Hollywood magic for you. And then I snuck onto the West Wing set. I'm running around the West Wing set, and I'm in the Oval Office, and it looks like the Oval Office. It's incredible. And this guy comes out of nowhere who, I don't know, worked for security at WB or was playing the part of a Secret Service agent. But he was like, "Hey, man, I need to see your ID." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, it's right here." And I like ran away. And I run through a door, and I go outside of the stage, and I close the door, and Martin Sheen is standing there in a presidential bathrobe, smoking a cigarette, and he's like, "Hey, do you have a light?" And I was like, "No, I don't, Martin Sheen." And I ran away. And the whole day was magical. It was one of those magical moments I'm talking about. It was magical that we shot for 22 hours for a day of the Gilmore Girls, and everybody was so nice, and I got to work with all these great people. And then like 2 months later, I got a call from casting, and they said, "Hey, Matt, you said you were in SAG, right?" I was like, "Yeah, I am, right?" Right? I'm in SAG, right? They're like, "No, you're not. You lied to us. But you're in so many shots. So we're just going to have to pay the penalty. Welcome to the union." I was like, awesome. So now it's 12 years later, and so many things have happened, and things have been up and down and crazy. And now I work 100 yards from the building where I told that lie. I do a sitcom called Mom on CBS at the Warner Brothers lot, and my room is just, I can see the place where I lied for the first time. And now I know that I'm not lying, that I do belong here, and I made the right choice. Thanks.
That's actor, comic, and voice actor Matt Jones, recorded at the 2014 Riot LA Comedy Festival. We will always know him as Badger from Breaking Bad, but these days he can be seen on the CBS comedy Mom. You've been listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. Many thanks to Abby Launder of Riot LA. These stories were recorded by Wes Bentley. You can find all the past episodes of this program at kcrw.com/unfictional. While you're there, you can leave a comment, like the show on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Unfictional. Plus, you can always podcast the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you do like the program, please leave a nice review on iTunes. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. Thanks to the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation for their support. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional on KCRW.com.